Welcome to Encounters in the EAP Classroom, a podcast that reflects upon different experiences in the higher education English language classroom and provides thoughtful suggestions for both learners and instructors. I'm your host, Laura McNabb. Hi, and thank you for joining me today. I've been teaching EAP online for the past 5 semesters, and overall, I've enjoyed the experience of online teaching, and I'm keen to figure out how to do it better and keep it as an option going forward. While some students were less enthusiastic about the scenario, there were students who really enjoyed and flourished in the online classroom. And it seems that to simply revert back to a fully in-person classroom with no online option denies the reality of the diverse student body. Today, though, I'm not focusing on the diversity of the students, but rather on the diversity of the roles we have as EAP instructors, and how these roles can be utilized more effectively for both on-site and online classrooms. Now, the roles that I'm going to refer to today are those in Jeremy Harmer's book, The Practice of English Language Teaching, the 2007 publication, which I believe is the 4th edition. And it outlines 8 different roles of instructors: controller, assessor, organizer, prompter, resource, tutor, investigator, and participant. What I found is that some of these roles were easier to do online than others, and the role that really challenged me, but I believe is so significant for student communicative development, was the participant. Let's take a look first at the 8 roles as they are presented by Harmer. The controller is in charge of the class and keeps the attention focused and the students progressing along. This is a role from traditional classrooms to present day, making sure that students are moving through the lesson. The assessor is another familiar role of checking that students are learning the material set out by the curriculum. Are they developing the knowledge and the skills intended by the course? And assessments can be formal or informal check-ins. Organizer's role connects to the controller, making sure that things flow smoothly, whether these are the learning activities or learning feedback, but that there is a fluid movement in the classroom. Things have timings. Things are sequenced in a suitable order. The prompter is creating ways for elicitation and increased participation from students. The prompter will notice which students tend to hang back and need encouragement, and which students need assistance. The resource role is there to offer suggestions, provide consultation when necessary. And nowadays, I feel that I do less resourcing of information and more about how to find information, how to use the search engine, how to locate authoritative sources, how to recognize authoritative sources. The tutor role, another familiar role, helps learners, especially in the higher levels, intermediate or advanced, as students design and organize their learning projects. So rather than a full class like the controller, the tutor works one-on-one with students in their individual situations. One can see actually where language coaching can springboard from tutoring, shifting from that idea of providing answers. The tutor works with the learner as they develop learner autonomy and independence in their own learning. The investigator, the role which brought me to this podcast, the investigator is interested in self-development and also interested in improvement of the teaching profession, and in my case, EAP. And the focus of today's episode, the participant, which puts the teacher into the activity as an active member of the activity. So the challenge for me has been how to navigate these various teaching roles as the EAP classroom shifted online to a high flex, hybrid, blended class format. And I don't know about you, but I found some roles migrated more easily and comfortably than others, or at least they appeared to. Overall, I felt like I'm navigating the new learning environment reasonably well. These past semesters, I have been either on Zoom or Big Blue Button for most of my teaching time. And this means that I keep students all together in the main room if I need, or I put them into breakout rooms. It means that I can share documents with them, I can share my screen, I can provide links to switch to other programs. The chat is available both class-wide and as well as private chats between me and students, along with the polling features that allow for anonymous feedback from students. So in the average 100-minute class, I most regularly flip between a full class lockstep and breakout rooms of either pairs or small groups of students. And the Zoom screen or the BBB screen allows me to see all the students in one checkerboard or one list and to easily take attendance. And then as controller, I can even manage things like the background noise, asking students to mute their microphones, and when students are having connection issues and they're coming in and out. This is not nearly as distracting as when students have issues and they're coming back and forth in and out of a classroom. I use PowerPoint slideshows, and I keep that up on the screen as a focus point with the images and the message and the learning points, and also to help regulate the pace for the full group. As a prompter, I find Zoom or BBB or many of these other options fantastic because the students' names are on their sign-in, so I can address them from the very first day, from the very first class, by their name and keep an accurate record of who's participating more, who's participating less. And it seems like online has been so much more facilitative for my role of controller and my role of prompter than being on site would be. For the organizer role, this was a little bit more of a challenge for me as well, because no longer was I able to just banter with the class as I'm adjusting when a learning activity isn't going the way I had expected it to. In a classroom on site, it doesn't work out. I'm chatting with them and I'm making adjustments and I'm shifting the activity. But when you're online, you're talking to the screen, it becomes really apparent every second, every minute, that you are not in control, that you are not organized and running the show in the way that is the most efficient and effective for your students. So I had to get it together and stop relying on my experience. And it was a good thing. And I'm so happy it happened. I had to start becoming more calculated, more intentional, and figure things out more specifically before the class started. And at first I thought, oh my goodness, I'm back to this very specific lesson plan. But truthfully, it has helped. And I don't know, I'd have to check in with my students, but of course they don't have experience with me before I got this organized again. As a resource, this role online allows me to share links, share documents in the chat with the students, and I don't have to interrupt the flow. It's kind of like having a side panel on the whiteboard, but it's so much faster and easier for me to do these things on the screen and with a keyboard. And as an assessor, I can ask for materials to be submitted in soft copy through the chat or prior to class on Dropbox. And then the beautiful, beautiful thing, and I think this is for both as the controller, perhaps definitely as the prompter and as the assessor, the fact that every student has a screen 1 foot, 30 centimeters away from them. So this means that I can use materials that have small font. I can use materials that have detailed images. I can use my students' homework and give feedback, and everybody can see it. It's a front row seat for every single student. I'm not thinking about, oh, how am I going to point to it on the projected screen, or how can the students at the back see it when I'm in classroom such and such that only has one screen. It's awesome. Online has made all of that a non-issue. And as the role of tutor, the chat, again, works super well. Students can send me questions privately and I can respond to them. Some students, just about every class, will stay after the class has formally finished and they'll ask more questions or talk about something to do with their projects. And I've also noticed that students are more comfortable sending me emails as well. So the comfort level with the online teaching space is becoming more familiar and more comfortable for the students. And with an online platform, I can place materials, links, I can provide summary videos for a full class, a 15-minute summary, or even just a summary of a particular topic that seemed like it was a little bit confusing or unwieldy for the students. So it was a steep learning curve, and mostly it was made steep, as we all know, by the immediacy of suddenly, boom, we were put online. But I really enjoy the online teaching world. And only one role has actually been more challenging than the rest. Some of them were a bit more challenging just because of bad teaching habits probably I'd fallen into. But the role of participant, I have yet to find the best answers. I have some answers, but I'm still in search. So first, let me explain why I think this is such an important role. Thinking of my students who are in a classroom in their home country, which is not a country of English as the lingua franca, students in my classrooms, many of them have studied English for linguistic competence, not for communicative competence. And so using English online can be even more daunting for some of them. And the subtleties, the nuances, all of this is very unfamiliar to the students. And even for students for whom communicating in English in an informal environment is familiar, the more formal register, formal classroom environment of higher education is new for them as well. And when you think about it, in a classroom where everyone is novice, the teacher is the role model. The teacher models this linguistic capital that Pierre Bourdieu speaks of in his book, Language and Symbolic Power, talking about social capital that allows a person to shift from one cultural environment to another. And he talks about the fact that it's not actually the vocabulary or the grammar, but that it's these little things, these subtleties, these nuances that allow you to understand as a newcomer to an environment, to a community, what is being communicated. So in the physical classroom, I would simply join in a small group. I would pull up a chair and I would join the conversation of the group as they're working through their project or their activity. And I wouldn't be teaching, I would simply be participating, but I would be careful to role model things that I wanted them to notice. Maybe the way I spoke or the way I dealt with a topic, the way I included everyone in my discussion, not zeroing in on one person. And then after a certain amount of time, I'd stand up and move on to the next group. So what was happening, though, is the students that I'm working with in that specific group were actually having a zone of proximal development space, Vygotsky's ZPD, where I am the guide. I am working with them on their topic at their speed, in their interests, but at the same time taking them through the space of co-constructing meaning with each other. And also at the same time as well, students in other groups can overhear what I'm doing with that particular group, or also they might not even be aware that they're taking in anything. It could be subconscious or unconsciously happening for them. This is not easy to do in the online classroom. This was the challenge I found. Because first of all, in the main room, yes, everybody is privy to all conversations, barring private chats. But as soon as we go into breakout rooms, there is no eavesdropping. In the breakout room, you are secluded and disconnected from the rest of the group. At least this is what I have experienced with Zoom and BBB. I am super excited about what can happen in AR and VR classrooms because I think we've got the potential then to all be sitting in the same space. Now, the second thing is, though, is that when I join a breakout room with a small group, it's not strategic. I haven't been eavesdropping nearby and then picking my moment to slide in, but instead, I'm simply coming in and then trying to find out what's happening in that group, which is great, except sometimes I arrive and there's nothing happening. And I'll be like, hello. And then a student comes on and says, oh, teacher, yeah, we are all doing a reading right now, or we're all searching for something. So in that moment, I've joined and there's really nothing for me to do. Like, I ask if they need any help, but they're fine, they're great. And so this space, it's not happening in that moment, which I am unaware of when I'm coming in. To avoid this, one thing that I did do was set up small groups. And I set up an activity, an independent activity, that the students could be working on mostly outside of the classroom. And then I would have each group come online, so to speak, at a certain time, so that I would just work with that group for 20, 25 minutes, a small group of four students. I felt that it was better because I worked with them a bit more organically as they worked through wherever they were in their project. And then at a certain amount of time, I would let that group go and I'd bring in another group. And it's also possible to do this having all of the students online in the class at the same time and simply having, you know, shifting through each group. Some organizations are open to this, but I've found that some organizations are not so much because students feel that if they've signed up for a course that has 100 minutes of contact with the teacher, then that's what they're looking for, right? They're not looking for only 20 minutes, even though I would actually argue those 20 minutes with me are more qualitative than doing 100 minutes with the whole group. But I understand, I totally understand where they're coming from. So with the small group drop-in becoming a little more inaccessible to me with online classes, I also then opted to see myself as a participant of this group in the wider sense. Yes, there's the role of the student and the role of the teacher, but at the same time, within my role of participant as part of this group, I started to consider my vocabulary, my speech prosody, my interaction, both in the class time, in interaction with the students, as well as all of my written communication with them as well. So thinking about my PowerPoint slides, thinking about activity sheets, the chat, these were all places as well that I am a participant. And I find that even when I'm not necessarily a participant who's role modeling the nuance and the subtlety, there's always value in demonstrating equitable and inclusive language as I co-construct or negotiate for meaning, that even though I disagree with someone else or even though I don't understand someone else, that I can role model as a participant, listening carefully, considering ideas, and finding a way to gracefully have this discussion. And this leads me to a solution that I've used a lot, and especially now online, which I've mentioned already, project-based learning or activity-based learning, inquiry-based learning, giving students projects that request more active participation from them. And these projects also allow for more independence and autonomy. So again, then when I join the students, or I'm even working with the students in the full class, they are the controllers, they are the organizers of their projects, which leaves me with just the role, well, not just the role, but a significant role as simply a drop-in participant. And that means that I am letting them control and organize and set up their own project, and I simply follow them and role model language usage rather than teaching and prescribing and explaining and telling them. I used to be more of a bystander when students were in small groups because I believed that the students should have the space and the time to make their own communicative progress. However, what I started to notice is that there weren't enough differences in ability to have any zone of proximal development for the most part. There weren't enough students who had a plus one in higher education communication who could do Krashen's input hypothesis or who could be the guide in this new area for students. Most of my students who were fluent and comfortable, and I've talked about this before, were not familiar with the formal arena of the higher education classroom. And that is the space where I believe we as teachers have a significant role to play. As I've already mentioned, the organic eavesdropping casual drop-in is a bit more difficult to do online. I schedule it, and at the beginning of the class, when I put students into their small groups and send them off, I will say, okay, group one, I'll be dropping in at 9:30. Group two, I'll see you at 10:15, or what have you. So this allows them to be prepared for when I come, which means that I'm not dropping in when they're all reading silently and there's nothing to participate in that allows me to role model much. And it also allows them to then decide, oh, okay, we would like to be doing this part of it when Laura joins us because then we can get some help. The other thing, coming back to the issue of the 100 minutes of contact that students may think, we're not getting that when we're in breakout rooms. Laura's not with us all the time. I make a summary video, and it's a summary of my breakout room travels and the things that I've noticed and the things that I've seen. So even though I had this discussion in this breakout room, I make a summary of it for all of the students. The video becomes available for everybody, and there's less worry that students have missed out on something. This is where I'm at. I'm still looking to get much better and much more fluid in the space of online, considering that I want the EAP classes I teach to be accessible for as wide a range of students as possible. If you tend not to participate in your students' projects and drop into their conversations, I encourage you to do so. And if you already do, hey, we just want to stay really conscious and really aware and mindful of what we're doing, what we're modeling. And for all of us to keep finding ways on site and online to be active in our students' communicative skill developments. Thanks for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for joining today. Encounters in the EAP Classroom is written, hosted, and produced by Laura McNabb. You can learn more about Laura and her teaching at her website, www.windowsoflife.com. If you have teaching ideas or would like to collaborate with Laura, she would love to hear from you. See you next time!